This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. We'll switch gears just a bit. We're joined by John Steinman. He is the producer and host of Deconstructing Dinner, the internationally syndicated radio show and podcast, streaming television series, and annual film festival. And his book is Grocery Store, The Promise of Food Co-ops in the Age of Grocery Giants. And good morning to you, John Steinman. Nice to hear your voice, John. And I think you're going to have to pull him up, Matt. So let's get John on the line, and we will see what we can do. 877-217-5757 is your number. Talk at talklouisiana.org is our email. John, hello.
Hello. Thanks for having me, Jim.
Well, this is an important book, and you deconstruct the food retail sector and the shadows cast by corporate giants. You believe that what we are experiencing is not a very good thing and can be improved immensely. How can we do that?
Well, so what I write about in the book is not only an alternative to the big grocery stores, but it's one that's being practiced here in the United States and in Canada, where I'm from, for well over 100 years. And so what I do in the book is I track the history of the cooperative grocery store. So, you know, the consumer co-op is using this model of cooperation that has been used in many sectors of the economy. Agriculture is a great example, where farmers have come together to form co-ops as a way to purchase products together that they need on their farm, or perhaps sell those products into the food system. Consumer co-ops are different. There are, in this case, a grocery store or any consumer outlet that is owned by the people shopping at the store. So for me, I'm a co-owner of my grocery store where I live in British Columbia, which means that I, along with, in this case, 13,000 other members, are shareholders in my grocery store. So for me, I put in $50, and I'm now a shareholder in the store, which means I get to vote for the people who run the store, the board of directors. And by doing that, it really places more control in the future of our grocery stores in the hands of the people shopping at the store. So rather than be at the mercy of one of a handful of increasingly powerful grocery giants, the food co-op model allows for consumers to actually call the shots and be much more in power to determine what's on the shelves of the grocery store.
How prevalent is this?
Well, it's prevalent enough that, you know, I would consider it a movement, and there are right now 230 food cooperatives across the U.S., and among those are about 300 locations. So some co-ops are large enough that they have multiple locations. There's one in Seattle that has 15 locations. That's the largest. For the most part, most food co-ops are a single store where the entire head office of the grocery store is inside the store itself. So rather than have a head office in some distant headquarters, like would be the case with Albertsons, which is headquartered in Idaho, or Ralph's, which is owned by Kroger, with their head office in Cincinnati, the head office of a food co-op is right in the community itself. So there are quite a few of them across the U.S. In Canada, there are also a few different networks of food co-ops. There are about 15 of them that are more in this sort of independent community-based model. And then some are part of these larger networks of co-ops where each individual store is a member of a larger federation. And there's quite a few of those in Western Canada as well as Eastern Canada, too.
What benefits are there for the consumer with a co-op that would not be available from one of the major chains?
Well, I think a big part is choice. You know, really, as a consumer, we are led to believe that when we walk into a large grocery store that there is an abundance of choice. But one of the practices that I write about in the book that is relatively unknown to consumers and to really the entire public are the practice of slotting fees. So what these are is food manufacturers will pay to access the shelves of the grocery store. So as you can imagine, walking down the aisles of a grocery store, and anything that is at eye level is probably some of the most lucrative real estate inside a grocery store. And sure enough, many of those shelves are being sold to the largest food manufacturers on the planet.
Dr. Landry, Hippolyte Landry, former coroner for East Baton Rouge Parish. Matt, you're going to have to pull up Dr. Landry. He is calling in. Dr. Landry, you were on with John Steinman. Hi. Hippolyte Landry, good morning to you on Jefferson Highway.
Good morning, Jim.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. What's your question, Dr. Landry?
I don't have a question. I have a statement. With the big news about the Times Picayune being sold, it goes back to my heart. In 1942 and 1943, I was a paper boy for the Times Picayune, and I delivered that paper every morning. I still have the canvas bag that they gave me. It's never been used to hang on my bicycle. Times Picayune, you all in the States.
All right. Well, okay. Well, Dr. Landry, I wish you'd called when Alex was here, but it is a major part of our world for 182 years. But John Steinman, who's based in Canada, is pushing for food co-ops. His book is Grocery Store, The Promise of Food Co-ops in the Age of Grocery Giants. John, do you think that there is a movement in this area that will be significant in the next few years?
Well, certainly in the southern United States, there are fewer food co-ops than anywhere else in the country. That said, there is one in New Orleans that is there all by itself. And, you know, there are a number of organizations across the country, particularly one in, called the Food Co-op Initiative, that is supporting any communities or groups of people that come together that want to start a food co-op. And there's examples, too, of many independent grocers who are retiring, and communities like one in Moore, Kansas, as an example, decided to take over that grocery store so that it didn't disappear, and they used that cooperative model so that the community could ensure that a grocery store remained in their community. So I think there's a big future in co-ops, particularly in these communities and neighborhoods of cities where grocery stores are not anywhere near where anyone's living, and that's happening more and more. So I think that's a big next step within the food co-op movement, is to apply the model in those communities. So, you know, I wrote the book thinking that this is the future of our grocery stores. It's a way to bring public ownership into the food system, something I think we value generally in most parts of our everyday, whether it's public transit, libraries. These are all areas of our lives that we consider to be essential services, and we've left them in the hands of the public to manage because of that. And
all right, we do have to roll, but the book is Grocery Store, The Promise of Food Co-ops and the Age of Grocery Giants. And thanks to you, John Steinman. It's been a pleasure. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for having me.
Congratulations on your work. We're joined now by Fred Rosenfeld. In our remaining time, 45 years ago, he was in charge of the fledgling New Orleans Jazz team president, and he made the audacious move of acquiring one Pete Maravich from the Atlanta Hawks. Had to give away a lot to get him, but it was a success, I think most people would agree, bringing Pistol Pete back to New Orleans, where he led the NBA in scoring for the New Orleans Jazz. And Fred Rosenfeld, this is significant now because the Pelicans, which, of course, are the NBA team in New Orleans now, have landed the number one pick, not just any number one, but Zion Williamson, who probably is the most heralded player to come out of college since Shaquille O'Neal of LSU. This is a significant move for the city and for the Pelicans franchise, but you were there on ground zero 45 years ago. How was it getting Pistol Pete?
Can you imagine? I was only 15 years old at that time.
Yeah, 15. There'd be 60 years old then. That would be, like, I can relate to that pretty easily.
Well, you know, I had made a decision because of my relationship at that time with other owners and general managers and coaches that I was not going to make player decisions. That was up to the professionals, and I'd watched other owners really not do well with that, because you made a zillion dollars doesn't mean you know basketball or basketball players. And right out of the box, I get that decision to make. And it wasn't that easy, because I believe at that time, and I guess I still do, that one player does not make a team. And we all agreed with that until you got the chance to get that one player. So it was a decision I had to make, and I made it. Pete was a big star. New Orleans was not a big market, a lower-sized market. and an expansion team, so I decided to do it. But David Geffen, who I really don't know, but I've read about him. He seems to be very, very talented down in New Orleans now.
Griffin.
He's going to have a tough decision to make because that first-round draft choice is not just a player, it's an asset. And I gave up two first-round draft picks and switched a third with Atlanta. And it was a little easier because I traded one of our draft choices for a first-round pick with Milwaukee. So I knew that, you know, we had only given up one and a switch. And at that time, the NBA was trying to sign players. I knew we were going to sign our first-round pick. So the bottom line is I did it. But it's not that easy a choice because it sounds exciting because the NCAA is a farm system for the NBA and the same with the NFL, and they create value in their players.
Well, we do have to close it down today, but let's bring Fred back and get more on this. Zion Williamson, looks like he'll be coming to New Orleans. The town is enthused for good reason. We'll be back tomorrow. Until then, stay tuned.